Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave. Oh, my goodness, here we are at the end of July. Can we all say this collectively? Thank God it's gone. July was really not a good month, and we're looking forward to August. We're looking forward to so much. Oh, my gosh. We all collectively have to be more positive than ever, so promise me that you will. Will you do that? Thank you. My name is Trish Hennessy. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, and we've got quite a show for you. Some surprises, as is the usual case. Some golden gems from the past, some birthday celebrations, and a guest that embodies the word hybrid. No joke. Allison Crockett is from the Washington, D.C. area. She had been immersed in dance. She heard a lot of songs in her head growing up playing the piano. She got involved internationally as well as domestically, and she has popped out a CD that is just so cool and creative and quirky and passionate and thoughtful and intelligent that I can't say. The tracks that we can play on the show, we will. I believe there is a parental advisory for this particular CD, and that's cool because it's grown folks' music. And speaking of which, here we go. Oh, you know that we love to play the classics at the top, right? Eddie Harris, can we please hear, listen here, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Welcome. Thank you.
The sun falls from the sky. The days go laughing by. The wind is crying. And peace, it's yours and mine. Please take the time.
That was fun to hear again. Woo! We had Miche Fembro on the show some weeks ago, and that was one of those songs. I'm telling you, I've known Miche for a while, never heard him in voice like that. When he sings full on like that, it's breathtaking. Hear the voices for Mary. That's the name of the song from A Better World by Camus, K-A-M-U. And I'm just so taken by this because apparently Kim Kepfer, who is the head of this organization, got together with Miche in that part of New York, the Rochester region. And I guess they developed this rapport so much that Miche took what he needed in the way of guidance from Kim, and this breathtaking result took place. I just can't say enough about Miche anyway, because he's amazing. He's one of these people that I have featured on this show that I believe should be an international star. He really is. He's quite formidable looking. He looks like a star. He sounds like a star. He's got personality to spare. He's a multi-instrumentalist. He's crazy good. He's funny as shiggity. There's the word for the day. I won't use it again. And I think that he's got plans in the works, and I'm anxious to hear, so we'll have to check up. Maybe when everybody and his mama is invited to call that first Tuesday, which is coming up next Tuesday. We'll have news about that because we've got a special guest happening next Tuesday, and that's a whole nother subject. But Frank Musacchio is also on that particular CD on bass, and Carl Kepfer as well. Also, Diane Bostick has to get mentioned because she wrote the lyrical content for the project, and Miche Fambro is the star of that show because he gave it life in the way of that vocal performance. David Sanborn, happy 67th birthday to you, David, as of yesterday. So nice to hear him. That was Poinciana, the song from Closer from 2005. I know it's an Ahmad Jamal song. At least he made it famous on his Poinciana CD, written by a couple of other folks. But David's interpretation of that is so nice. Everything he does is so nice. That saxophone has been a favorite for so many through the years, and we're so grateful that he seems to be healthy and touring with Brian Culbertson much of the time, and hopefully we'll have a chance to check up on him live and on this show very, very soon. We've been trying to do that now for the past several months. We'll do it eventually. Personnel on that particular CD, by the way, Christian McBride, Steve Gadd, Russell Malone, Larry Goldings, Luis Quintero, and Mike Manieri. Poinciana from Closer. Eddie Harris from 1968 to start things off. Listen here from the electrifying Eddie Harris. And David Newman and King Curtis were on that particular CD, as well as Ray Barreto and Joe Woolitz on percussion, Melvin Jackson on bass, Richard Smith on drums, and Jody Christian on piano. Eddie Harris, who was quite the character. Eddie, I love the story. Everywhere he went, got out the newspaper, liked to look at the obituaries. And it was much like my dad in that regard. That was a favorite pastime for my dad, too. When I heard that about Eddie, I just about fell out. But Eddie was quite vocal in his opinions. And just wish he was here to get a take on what the story of jazz is these days. Oh, he would have so much to say. God bless him. I'll tell you somebody else that had a lot to say last night on Cool Jazz Conversations. Oh, did we love our time with Alfredo Rodriguez. My God, 26 years old, already light years ahead of so many people who are twice his age in any kind of jazz you can discuss. It was a pleasure to be with such a wise soul, and I couldn't wait to share this track with you because it was one of those songs on Alfredo's brand new Sounds of Space that just hit me. And we'll have to discuss what the song actually means. I looked it up and got, a Spanish translation for it. But the title of the song is Sueño de Paseo. So there's a few different interpretations of what that could mean. And speaking of which, Alison Crockett comes your way at the top of next hour. You talk about interpretations of music. Woo, 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 woo. This girl is on fire. It's just new energy in the joint, and she will really rock your world. You'll see what I mean. But first, Alfredo Rodriguez, Sueño de Paseo from Sounds of Space on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you. tem que passar. Há dias que vêm, só vêm, e dias que vão e só vão. E eu sei também, só tem que passar.
Turn on to find these little gems that unless somebody directs you to where to find them or you happen to hit on a compilation disc and you pick up a vibe and then explore more, you wouldn't ever know. Man, well, thanks to Putumayo World Records, I got to know about Luca Mundaca. You just heard Ha Dias from Day by Day, and this gal is really special. Born in Chile, then moved to Brazil, a self-taught guitarist, and Putumayo thought so much of her that they incorporated that particular track on their CD release, Brazilian Lounge. I'm not necessarily sure I would call it lounge. You know, it's Brazilian music to be sure, but she is so mysterious. I am not quite sure about what to say about this lady. This particular track I heard, I guess about 5 years or so ago now. And I believe that she is now, as well as doing music, she is also a children's writer. And there are books that are out that have her work under the name of Yasmin, I believe. I'm going to have to do more research. It's that shrouded in mystery. But I want to get more involved in Luca Mondaca's music, so you'll hear more. So cool. Chick Corea and Bela Fleck. Wow. Don't you love it when those two collaborate? The best of what keyboard can be and banjo. Who would have thought? Señorita from The Enchantment. This is their first full-length collaboration. That was back in 2007. Bela nominated for a Grammy for the song on that CD, Spectacle. And just real interesting how they buoy each other when they play. It is said that Chick becomes enamored of what Bela does on that banjo, so it inspires him to go higher, and no doubt Bela feels the same way. They turn out a lot of great work when they're working together. Alfredo Rodriguez, Sueño de Paseo. My friend Griselda in the chat room here says that she thinks it could be Dream, Walkway of Dreams. Now, I think sueño means sonar or sound, and paseo is walking or pathway, so that's open to interpretation. When Alfredo stops by on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, we'll ask him, because I certainly want to dive more into what he is all about. You need to know, though, that Sounds of Space was co-produced by Quincy Jones. Does that tell you what you need to know? Yeah. Quincy, as we talked about last night on Cool Jazz Conversations with Alfredo, Quincy Jones has had such a career that he need not fritter away his time with lesser thans. And from the accolades since last night that I've read about Alfredo, his musical prowess has been described as otherworldly, because it seems as though when you listen to the tracks on Sounds of Space, you are hearing what you think are two keyboardists, but it's just Alfredo. And he has surrounded himself with musicians on the CD that he has spent some time with, either Cuban-born as he has been, or those that he really trusts to get the quality of sound he is projecting. And I guess that Quincy helped him a lot with gathering those folks. So what you're hearing is just a work of art, honestly. Yeah, and a person who knows all about art and being involved deeply, not only in the conveyance of the art, but in the empowering and the inspiration for others when they hear her art, is Alison Crockett. She's coming up at the top of the hour. And I'm going to tell you something. I'll say this again when she's on the show with me. One of the amusing elements of listening to Mommy, What's a Depression?, which is the name of her CD, and Miche Fambro is in the chat room, so I know he'll appreciate that title, is that Alison waited until the marriage thing took and the having kids thing took for her to bring out this other CD. She was so ready. She was about to pop and lose her mind. She had to make this CD, and she's all over the page. She's everywhere. She's got spoken word on there. She's got hip-hop. She's got some words that she wanted to use that she couldn't say in front of the kids. She's got elements of jazz. She did something to Nature Boy I didn't think anybody was going to ever do. We'll hear that and a whole bunch more. She's coming up in less than 20 minutes from now. Let's see if we can pull in some more songs, shall we? One of the cooler-than-cool tracks from Sound Doctrine from Youngstown, Ohio. This is called Sacred Place for Gary from Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
I've got a dream for the world, peace in the rivers and everywhere, bridges of steel and love, and cities that smile. Oh, gray empty faces walk by. Hands try to hide all the loneliness.
Lord, when I heard that song, I went, no, she didn't make me cry. She did. Oh, my God. That girl, that song, Sackful of Dreams from Mommy, What's a Depression? Hold that thought. I just want you to know that you heard right before Alison Crockett. I need for you to know that you heard Paul Hardcastle from Hardcastle 2, Peace on Earth. And Sound Doctrine, Sacred Place for Gary from the CD Inspire. And we've talked about Paul Hardcastle. We've talked about Jerry B. and Sound Doctrine in shows previous. But let us spend our time now telling you about this amazing singer, songwriter, pianist, saving souls one blog at a time, ladies and gentlemen, Alison Crockett. Woohoo!
Yay!
Yay! It only took, what, 6 years?
That's really big.
No, look, you've been busy. You have been busy being a mommy. And
yes.
Just, man, and this is, Alison, this is why I am loving Mommy, What's a Depression? So much, because It was like you were itching to get to the recording studio and you just blew a gasket out.
Well, I mean, I know that my brother and I decided to be evil geniuses and create a, as he puts it, a masterpiece.
Oh, you did.
To take over the world. So that's what we were going for. We were trying to make art, and that's what we tried to do.
And you know, you might be cavalier in saying that, but honestly, ain't nobody turning out the kind of creativity that you did on this CD. And just when folks think that they have you pegged, oh, guess what? Here's another new chapter to Alison Crockett, and I was just astounded. I'm so excited for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate all the support that you have given me in this record. You know, it's been a tough road to get here. It's taken
really?
Some time, but we made it. We made it.
Now, what do you
and
mean when you say that?
Well, it takes a while, frankly, to make art without being boastful. It takes a while to think about it, to arrange it, to make it work, to make it be just the way that it should be. All while, you know, juggling all the other things that I need to do and my brother needs to do in our lives, and it just takes a second to get it all together.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I I'm not being stupid when I ask you that, but I should have known that because you are quite active in your blogging and on Facebook about how your life is, and you really do try to juggle in a wonderful way because you're always thinking about healthy dishes and better ways for your family to live, and you're being real vulnerable when saying, you know, this is one of those days I'm just tearing my hair out.
Honestly, like Facebook sometimes is a little bit of therapy. Twitter is also.
Yes.
Because, you know, I can just say, well, this is a bad day. And sometimes people say, oh, it'll be okay. And I'm like, thank you. I really appreciate it. Because I'm not doing well today.
Yeah. Well, it is.
And then other times. When I find something that's really positive and I just want to share it, then people tell me that, oh, wow, that was really helpful. I appreciate that. And it's always nice as an artist to hear that people enjoy what it is that I do, enjoy the music that I create. Because, you know, kids are just like, ah, you just mommy. You know? You're just mommy.
And Mommy, what about those new organic noodles that you said that you were going to make for us? Because I know that you're trying to be so healthy, too, and I'm thinking, this girl, my God. I mean, if she's not making art in some ways, if she's not maybe writing a song, she's thinking of new ways she can be creative in the kitchen. This is so cool.
Well, I try. I mean, I'm an avid gardener, and I still love to make music, and I teach, and I think about all sorts of things in my head, and that's just what comes out. And I'm blessed enough that people are interested and willing to listen.
And I'm so thankful to you. I really have a new appreciation for you. I certainly appreciated you when On Becoming a Woman came out, and just, you know, at the time, and it was like, what, 2003, right?
Something like that, 2004.
Okay. 2003, it was released in parts of Europe, though, was it not? And then 2004,
yes.
U.S.? Yeah.
Yes, there was an EP that was released. Mm-hmm.
And at the time, even then, because you want to be careful about saying, oh, at the time, that was pretty radical. But honestly, I had not been used to in my circles in Baltimore, and I'm a Philly girl, so I value myself
yay.
As fairly. Yay, you know, Temple U. There's my homie right there.
That's right.
I wasn't used to hearing the kind of candor you are all about in your tunes.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, it is. It's worthy of a thank you. I appreciate you, so thank you.
Oh,
so
thank
I'm here in Nappy, and I'm going, doggone. I mean, you're just real. You're out there and you're exploring erotic musings. And there's that sexual Alison Krauchett, and there's that, ooh, I wonder, Alison Krauchett. There's all sorts of shadings and colorings, and my God, did you explore that to the nth degree on this new CD?
Oh, thank you.
God bless Teddy, your brother.
Yes, he's a great guy. He breaks my behind quite a bit. No, do it again. Do it like it. No, that's wrong. Do it again. Or he'll that's not good enough. It's great. Cut it. Print it. And that'll be that.
So. That's wonderful. That's real decisive. And you want somebody like that.
Yeah. Well, he's a great brother. He's a great producer and he's a great musician. So we really kind of, we've been very fortunate to have a good working relationship. Not all siblings are able to do that, but we've been able to do that.
Yeah, now, it wasn't always like that, though. I mean, when you guys were coming up, when did you discover? Teddy discovered music and wanting to get involved, or you did first?
Well, we both started taking music when we were young, but I was very, very interested in the piano. And I stroked on pianos and played on them and whatever it is. Whenever I could get next to a piano, I wanted to be on a piano. And so when we got a piano, my mother got both of us lessons. And we were a little competitive. And so Teddy needed another teacher, and he got another teacher. And then he decided just to move to guitar. And so he became a guitarist, and he's a really good guitarist, by the way. And so I don't think that he had planned originally to be a musician, but that's what he wanted to do. And I just knew that this was probably what I was going to do if I wasn't going to be a psychiatrist. And then I thought, well, that's going to take too long. I'm going to be in school too long. I don't want to do it. And so I decided to become a musician. And I enjoy, I mean, that's how it kind of worked. That's it.
And honestly, you have become a psychiatrist in your own way. I am really digging the blogs that I see you're putting forth.
Thank you. I'm enjoying doing them. I mean, it came out of this record.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there was what I've been trying to say is, you know, we need to have a conversation about things that are in a little bit of a deeper way than we have been having in our political and our social discourse. And I've just been kind of frustrated because, you know, I wanted to talk about some of the things that I did and some of the things I've been thinking about. I said, well, you know what, let me just put this stuff down because it's the same as any other situation. I'm getting a little distracted because my phone is ringing. But I just decided to kind of write my thoughts because I read a lot. My brother and I constantly have political conversations, constantly. And we're always talking about, oh, did you see me depressed? Did you see this? Did you see how he got slammed? Wow, look at that. And all these kinds of things. So we decided to, you know, he said, why don't you just make a blog and write some
That's
of this
beautiful.
Stuff down and talk about some of the things that we were talking about on the record. So, I mean,
I decided
to just talk about that.
Well, you know what? You came to mind the other night because I got reacquainted with a quote from Elie Wiesel, who survived Auschwitz and his family did not. But I thought about you, and I was so glad to know you at this point because Elie Wiesel essentially said, if you remain silent, that means you are siding with the oppressor. So Dr. King said that very same thing, and, you know, they are on pedestals to me because, you know, some people carry weight when they say things. Some people can toss off things quite frivolously, and you don't know exactly where they're coming from because they don't have the kind of stones to back that up. But you are so brave and so out there, and I think that, Allison, we're both going to be on the FBI list soon if we don't show up. But We can't shut up.
I mean, well, the thing is, I don't think I'm being any more brave than anybody else in terms of just having conversations. I think that it's good to have a conversation about, you know, what, you know, gentrification. I was on both sides of that. I was a gentrifier coming into a neighborhood, and I was a part of the neighborhood as it was being gentrified. I saw neighborhoods, you know, when I left D.C., which is where I grew up, and that were one way when I left and a completely different way when I came back.
Mm.
And, you know, and it's disconcerting, and not everything is bad, but it's certainly frustrating while you're going through it. So, I mean, I just wanted to kind of bring that up and bring the kind of those kinds of feelings. I was reading, I can't think of his name right now. He wrote the book Makes Me Want to Holler, but about gentrification and coming at it from both sides of, you know, the young white couple coming in, just moving in, and the people who are in the neighborhood, and the stress and the strife of those two sets of people trying to work together, not always succeeding. But we need to have those pictures. We need to talk about these things and about in ways that are meaningful, because everybody's opinion is valid, but we have to have a way to move forward. I may not know that way forward. I'm not, you know, I just wanted to present the picture. That's the way I've kind of done all of my songwriting, is that I present little snapshots, little Polaroids. I don't tell you what happened before, and I don't tell you what happened afterwards. I'm not trying to solve the problem, but I'm going to show it to you the best I can.
Right. This is the way you see it. This is the way you feel it. And you certainly have credibility in order to back that feeling, to back that thinking up. And that's the power of you, because you are so brilliant with your writing, and you are so pointed in details of why you are saying what you're saying, that that, as we have seen since Barack Obama take office in 2008, we have seen what has happened when a brilliant African-American man is in the White House. The Pandora's box is completely opened up now, and people don't understand how racist their reactions have been. So, yes, we need to have that dialogue, because there are people who are feeling things. They're not quite sure of why they're feeling it. It's so deep, Allison. Oh, my God, this crevice gets continually wider and wider.
Well, the unfortunate thing is, like, the media has, with the advent of Fox, and it being so specifically from one point of view, their business model doing well, then you had the advent of MSNBC saying, well, we're not getting good ratings, so we're going to go on the other side, and we're going to be that. And so, well, how do you get your news? Well, who's right? Where are you coming from when you have this conversation? So there was a story about something, I can't remember what it was, on Fox News. I said, well, you know, there's some real merit to this, but I'm not sure how much merit there is, because I don't know if you're trying to push an agenda or not. And so, since this is not the agenda, this is not the philosophy that I kind of believe in, I'm not sure where you're coming from. But then on the other side, I'm more of the MSNBC crew, but I sit there and I say, well, wait a second, you might not be answering all the questions that need to be asked, because, you know, you have an agenda also. Where do you get your information that is as objective as possible? Because we're as humans, we can't be completely objective. But it felt like in the past people were trying to be objective, and we could all agree on a basic set of facts, just a basic set of facts, so that we could all be in the room discussing things, even if we have different opinions about how to perceive those facts. And that's what I tried to kind of say. I try to do that on Talking Like You Know, because I just coming from, you know, my daughter was asking me, well, who's Barack Obama and who's Mitt Romney and who are these people, and is Mitt Romney bad, is Barack Obama good, who are they, you know, and what does this mean, what's the depression, what's a recession? I don't know what these words mean.
Mm.
And so, you know, I tried to talk about, you know, as a parent, you're trying to make this stuff understandable to your kids in the best way that you can. But if you don't even get it, if you don't know what people are trying to say, well, God, dog, how are you even supposed to explain it to your kids? How are you
right.
supposed to have a conversation with anybody? How are we supposed to come together as a country to deal with the real issues that are facing us today? They're real and they're significant, and we're talking about stupid stuff and really not dealing with it because whatever news media outlet needs to gain a certain amount of ratings so they run with a certain type of story.
Well, and NBC and MSNBC, it's not what it used to be. Jeez, I was feeling like my mom because you start to sound like your mom or your dad sooner or later when you hit a certain age. Oh, I remember the good old days. But honestly, when the news was objective, when we had newscasters, journalists who really wanted to convey an objective news source as opposed to what you were being paid to say. Now, a couple of folks on Fox freely admitted that they were paid to not say anything but what was going to raise the ire of the American consciousness.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And then NBC and MSNBC are now owned by Comcast. Very, very heavy contributors to the Republican campaign. So, you know, you do wonder. CNN is falling in the ratings because they're getting to be shrill in their news delivery. And when you go shrill, that decidedly means, yeah, people are freaking out. And the media, right, the media is getting to be a source of pushing the envelope to the wall, and we are all reacting as opposed to thinking for ourselves.
Well, I mean, I grew up in a household where my grandparents were big political people in terms of they watched the news, and my parents watched the news, but I remember my brother and I would complain that, you know, we went over to my grandparents' house on my father's side, and they had on Agronsky and Company, which was basically a precursor to, not McLaughlin Group, but one of these other talk, you know, pundit shows. And we wanted to watch cartoons. And so, you could just watch Scooby-Doo, please. And they had on Agronsky and Company or some, like, news show. So, I mean, it's kind of in our blood to have these conversations. But I remember watching them as a teenager or watching these things and having a great sense of pride that I could watch something and this is this great person, whoever it is, whether it be Alex Brinkley or and later on Tim Russett or anybody else that was up there, and you could really watch and say, wow, that Tom Brokaw really knows what he's talking about. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, you really understood that these were great people that really, really spent a lot of time understanding the issues and could tell them to you in a relatively unbiased way, and you could find out what was going on. And as a parent and as a citizen, I just kind of got frustrated. And as well as a musician, you know, you get frustrated with the same thing with the corporatization of music being one thing, or one set of people want one thing, and so you're only supposed to hear that one thing, that one way of understanding or hearing music. So, well, what about the rest of us who want to hear something else? What if you don't like that?
Mm.
What if what you like is a mixture of this, 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 and this? And that's kind of me. I'm kind of that person that doesn't always fit the box.
Don't ever get frustrated, because honestly, you know how life can change on a dime. And now that Mommy What's a Depression is out, there will be folks gravitating. I see it now. There are critics gravitating you, and by this time next year, there's going to be a whole lot of Alison Crockett wannabes.
Well, I hope so. Well, I mean, I hope that there are at least Alice Crockett listeners and buyers. I would like that.
Well, yeah.
But, be,
right.
But I hope. I mean, I hope that I actually don't want to be the only person talking about this stuff. It's great that, you know, that I'm talking about it, or maybe I'm one of the few people that is. But it would be nice if there was more of a Curtis Mayfield, Marvin Gaye-ish kind of feeling, where Marvin Gaye, right after What's Going On, came out with, you know, a really sensual record. He's an artist. He says what he wants to say and says it in ways that people can appreciate it. Curtis Mayfield said, oh, my goodness. He uplifted a drug dealer or a druggie, an addict, into this almost operatic fashion with Freddie Zidd. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Who does that now? Who does that? I mean, I hope that I'm trying to do a little bit of that. If somebody can compare me to Curtis Mayfield, I'd be like, woohoo, I've arrived.
Well, you know what? I'll go back to a conversation I had with Kirk Whalum, and it fits what you have just said, because Kirk was talking about his experience getting into the music business and the motivation behind why he did, as opposed to his nephew, Kenneth Whalum III. And the fact of the matter is, Kirk said, Trish, I'm going to be honest with you. I got involved in the music for not as noble of a reason as Kenneth did. Kenneth felt led to share his music because he had to. It wasn't because of girls. It wasn't because of cars. It wasn't because of power. He felt that he had a message that had to be shared with people who need to be nurtured by the music. So that's a huge thing. And, Allison, you know that. And, you know, we're seeing a Justin Bieber world. We're seeing...
I don't have any problems with Justin Bieber. Knock yourself out. I just think it needs to be balanced. There needs, you know, when looking back, I mean, again, I hate to say, well, looking back in my day, but looking back, you know, you had Prince at the same time as you had Madonna, as you had Pat Benatar, as you had Lionel Richie, as you had all sorts of people. You had Stevie Wonder. You had so many different artists that were doing so many different things that
creative.
Were all played on the radio, and they were creative, and they were saying something. And everything doesn't have to be uber meaningful for it to be great, but you have to have a balance. That's all I'm looking for.
Yeah,
just a balance. So I mean, I want to shake my behind when I go out too. You know, I don't necessarily always want to hear about what's going on when, you know, in the world when I'm shaking my behind. But
right.
When I'm finished shaking my behind,
I don't necessarily want
to, you know, shake my behind 24/7 because my behind would get tired. Something else to do. You know, we all don't read romance novels. We all don't read all mystery novels. We don't, you know, we all don't watch the Housewives, the Real Housewives of whatever place that they're in.
Thank God.
We don't watch this one thing. Thank God. You know, we don't all just watch one thing. We eat many different foods so that we remain healthy. And our brains need to remain healthy. And our minds and our spirits need to remain healthy as well.
Yep.
And music is a part of that. It's a part of our spiritual and mental well-being.
That's right.
And it's, you know, imagine if the music was cut off. Like, you walk into a store, there's music. You walk into a doctor's office, there's music. You drive in your car, there's music. You have music attached to your arm now. And you have little earbuds where you can go anywhere. You never don't have to have music. Imagine if that was all cut off.
Oh, Lord.
It's astonishing. We didn't have this. You know, 50, 60 years ago, you had to physically go someplace to make music, to hear it. You had to really work harder to really experience music. And I think that we've lost the understanding of how deeply important music is to us. and how it nourishes who we are as human beings.
And actually, it should be brought up, too, that you don't remember, but I do because I was a little girl at the time, but I remember records being burnt and kids not being able to listen to certain kinds of music.
Mm.
So here we are. We have the absolute freedom to hear anything, but we should never take that for granted because that could change back to life on a dime.
Mm-hmm. In an instant. I mean, I doubt it anytime soon, but it can. I mean, the thing is that the privileges that we have, I mean, I actually just wrote about this on my blog, which is MissDivaBlue@blogspot.com. But I wrote about this on my blog that that privilege needs to go back to what it originally meant, which is a certain kind of humility rather than entitlement.
Mm.
Having music in our lives, having things, is it's a privilege. It's not an entitlement. It's not something that we should feel like we just deserve. You know, my kids say, "Oh well, mommy, bring this over to me. Bring this food over to me." No, you can get it yourself. Mommy worked hard for this. You can go to the, you can go into the refrigerator and get your milk yourself. You have 2 feet. You have a brain.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it. And in trying to teach them and understand, you know, we pray. We say, you know, thank God for the things that we have because we don't have to have them. These are privileges that we are able to live in a certain way, that they're able to go to school. There are people, I mean, I hate to sound like my parents again, but there are kids who are not able to go to school. There are kids who are not able to have that, you know, that granola bar that I made from scratch to take with them to school. They might not have that. This is a privilege. And I think that we're in a society right now sometimes where we take our privileges as entitlements.
Oh, absolutely.
And we need to start being humble with our privileges, you know, understanding that these things are, we don't have to have anything. We don't have to have anything. We can go ahead.
No, and back to what you said, and that's why we really do have to monitor the media, because the media, to a large extent, has been responsible for pushing this self-gratification immediately, fostering this atmosphere. We really do have to take accountability and responsibility and humility back, because a lot of kids coming up, Allison, they don't know what that means.
No, they really, well, you know, I teach children. I teach everybody on the planet in terms of age group, except for maybe high school students right now. And I've been working with kids and working with adults my entire musical life. And it's quite frustrating when kids see, you know, because kids are they normally don't see the long view because that's the children. But when they really don't see what it is that they do have, or they don't understand why the information that they're being given is important, and it becomes frustrating as an adult, as a teacher. And it's not just people at the quote-unquote lower end of the economic scale. There's a lot of feelings of entitlement in some of these kids. But there's also a great deal of love and joy and respect for once they understand what it is that they're getting.
Mm.
And they see it. They can, oh, wow, that song that we sang? Wow, I heard that song. You mean that that's something that we all know? Like, that America knows about? Oh, wow, this is amazing. Look at what I can do. And they start singing and playing, and they see their space in our human network, and they see where they start to fit, and they see where they can go, and it's a very exciting place to be in when you're working with kids. But it is frustrating when they don't really see all the stuff that they have in comparison.
And maybe it would be a difference if we understood that by getting children early and throwing out the word tolerance and replacing that with embracing instead, maybe
that.
You know, it might make all the difference in the world, because once you are embracing of all different kinds of other little children, then you seem to have an inborn appreciation for what that's all about, songs of different cultures, songs that we learn in America. But hey, look at what my little friend learned in Bulgaria, or look at what my little friend learned in South Africa. And as opposed to force feeding a notion of this over the top pride that we have been accustomed to in the USA, we need to think more globally. And I know that you agree with that.
Well, I do. I mean, I think that, you know, the whole American exceptionalism thing, I think that that's great on one hand, but there's a whole group of people in America who are kind of like, well, you know, you all weren't all that great to us. Well, we didn't get this American exceptional part. We had to kind of, no disrespect, we had to clean your toilets, and we had to make, you know, in order for, quote-unquote, Americans to be exceptional, somebody had to do the back-breaking work. And had to do that, and had to do that without a lot of thanks. And it wasn't just black people. And it wasn't not white people either. It's that there's, you know, I don't want to say that there's, you know, I don't want to be against people making money. I don't. Because I would love to have money. It'd be great. It'd be great to have a lot of money. I'm not discounting that in any way, sense, or form. I'm just saying that there needs to be an understanding that once you have that money, you know, you need there's a measure of responsibility and understanding that you're not the only person on the planet who has an understanding of how things work. And you know, I went overseas. When I went overseas to perform quite a bit, it opened my eyes a lot.
I'll bet.
Because I saw so many different ways of being in such a small period of time. And a lot of Americans never get that opportunity. The most difference that they get to see is maybe going to Canada or going to a tourist area in, like the Bahamas or something such like that. They might go to Mexico to a tourist area. Most Americans, as, you know, just regularly do not go to places where somebody doesn't speak their language, or where their culture is not dominant. And I remember my first time going to Japan, it was fun, exciting, and scary. I went I had a meeting with somebody, and I had to take the subway by myself.
Oh, wow.
And I sat there, I said, oh my goodness, I can't read. I can't read. I can't talk. If I don't find where I'm going to go, I'm going to crawl up into a ball and die. I just don't know what I'm going to do.
Oh, gosh. What did you do?
I mean, fortunately, there was somebody who did speak some English, and people were very nice, and they helped me to figure out where I needed to go. I didn't get lost. And the person that I was meeting did speak English. And, you know, and I've recorded with people in Japan. People in Japan are lovely and wonderful people.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They dearly love music. If you want to find anything on the planet that has ever been recorded, go to Japan. I believe that, and probably Northern Britain is where all the music of the world has been kept.
Isn't
because
that something? Wow.
There's something like in northern UK where it's just dark and dank. They listen to every piece of black music that has ever been recorded, made. They know stuff that I've never seen. They dance to it. That's why you have Adele. That's why you have Amy Winehouse. That's why you have those people, because that music was so much a part of their lives. it's just there. The repository of music is there. And it's astonishing. And you start seeing, you know, we speak English, but we don't speak English. We speak American.
Yeah.
Australians speak Australian. And English people, they speak English. Because some of the language bears no resemblance. They're very different. And they're wonderful people. I have great friends that are still there. They're wonderful people. But it's different. And once you understand the difference and you can feel comfortable with the difference, you can start seeing in yourself, well, there's a certain level of humility. Everything that I do is not the best. Everything that I do is not, there are these people over here who have something, that have something to say as well. And when you start seeing that, then you have a connection, and as you say, embrace. We embrace each other, and we know that we don't have to agree all the time. We don't have to have the same views, but we all are human. You know, if the aliens came down to take over the planet, it would be us against them. I wouldn't be saying, "Well, take Whitey. He's not like me." I wouldn't say that. We're all human. We all know that we come from the same basic dust of the earth. And once we start seeing that, it'll hopefully be a little easier for us to get along and to not have as many problems as we have.
Well, I knew that we were going to just, I can't stand it that 40 minutes have gone by. And I want to play another track because you were predestined to speak about your music as well as be the artist who enables the universe to hear it. But I wanted to play, Allison, I Am a Million.
I love that song.
I do too. And I think that we need to hear it. It's from Mommy, What's a Depression? My guest is Allison Crockett, and we'll delve a little bit more into Allison's astounding background right after this on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Check this song out.
Of my sisters, the sins of my cousins who turned away dozens, who reached out and welcomed my black ass to the world, who nurtured me and told me I was free as freedoms were stripped from me. I pledge allegiance to this country.
Time for us to be.
Crockett, I Am a Million from Mommy, What's a Depression? Allison, that is strong stuff. Every hair on my arm is up.
Oh, thank you. That's one of my favorite songs.
Man.
I love that song.
Just a joyful affirmation.
Well, I what happened is when I was going to college in Philadelphia at Temple University, I would ride down Broad Street.
Oh, yeah.
There was a big billboard. I think it was after Allegheny Avenue. And there was a big billboard with a little black boy with his hand up, and it had the words, "I am a million" on it.
Wow.
And I would look at that over and over again, and I would say, what the heck is he talking about? What is that about? I don't really understand. And I knew it had some sort of meaning, but I would look at it every day as I drove down the street. It really always moved me. And one day, you know, the way that I come up with materials, I just kind of sit down at the piano and I just see what comes out. And I, as I was playing with this bass line, that doo doo beep beep boom boom, that bass line there, I was like, well, what is this about? What is this song about? I don't know. And the words just kind of come out. And eventually, it's like, I am a million. That's really what it's about. It's about, you know, us coming together and standing up and saying that we are worthy of note, that we have something to say, that people need to listen, that I can stand up and be something. And all of those things that you can kind of put in all of that, and that's the song that kind of came out. And we had great fun at the end putting all of that together with the backgrounds and the strings and just piling it all on and me singing really high and
yeah,
all the chords and just having, you know, because I do all of my background vocals. Every background vocal on this record is me.
Oh, my.
And so,
gracious.
So, you know, on Gentrification,
you'll hear a whole bunch of men's voices and old women's voices. That's all me. So we had,
really?
We had a lot of fun. Yes, that's all.
Oh, my God. You're like the music world's definition of Eddie Murphy.
Hilarious.
I had no idea. Oh, my
God. It's all me. It's technology, you know, just that's what we had fun with. My brother he's far more technically gifted in music than I am in terms of the technology. And so what he did is he just found a whole bunch of stuff to modify the instruments, to modify my voice, to do all these different things. We call it like creative destruction and mixtape jazz. How, you know, how people in when technology first started coming around, and how Herbie Hancock kind of just recreated all sorts of different sounds, and Keith Jarrett recreated all sorts of different sounds, and Chick Corea trying to make things different, and Weather Report and Wayne Shorter, and all these kinds of different things that were coming out. And Stevie Wonder did the same thing with new synthesizers. It's creative destruction. You know, we're destroying the old, but we're creating the new, but we're not letting the old go away. And so we just had a lot of fun just building and mashing stuff together. And as my brother always says, I said, well, I don't know, this might be too much. Put it on there.
I love Teddy. Oh, that's great.
If you don't like it, we'll take it off.
That is so great. Gosh. And folks have to know, I mean, let me show off my research about Alison Krakut, because she is so... She's come to a place in her life, Alison. I just love the fact that you've got such wisdom and the confidence to deliver that wisdom. And I'm not sure where all this started, but I just so dig the fact that you were in my hometown, you were going to Temple, and that's where you met King Britt, right?
Yes, that's where I met King Britt. I was at the jazz program, and I was studying jazz voice at Temple University.
Yes.
And I was doing a lot of gigs around town. And that's how you learn the music. You go out and play it. And so I was doing a gig with a friend of mine named Anthony Belfilio, who is now a jazz professor in Nashville. And we were doing it also with a DJ named DJ Robbie Trunco. And we were doing this kind of... You know, acid jazz was starting to come in from Britain, and everybody was making all sorts of different things happen. So I was doing that, and a guy by the name of John Wicks came in and saw me, and he said, could you do this recording? I think that you would work. Okay, no, I didn't know. So I went in and said, could you learn this song? Sure. And so I learned the song, and it was Seasons Change.
No, man.
And King Britt was there. He's like, oh, yes, I didn't know who he was. I just saw why he was really nice. And can you do this song? Sure. So I sang it. We did it in 3 takes. Like, this is not jazz musicians' role, you know. And I was all, you know, puffed up and stupid. It's jazz's role. And so I did that. And I said, well, kid, could you do this other song? And I said, okay. So I sang, Getting Into It.
Uh-huh.
And I did that in about 4 takes, and I felt like I sounded like crap. And that record ended up premiering on, you know, Hot 97 or one of the radio stations up in New York, and was this lead single for the record, When the Funk Hits the Fan. And,
When the Funk Hits the Fan, man, that was hot back in the day, too.
Yes, it was. I mean, and I was with such great musicians. All, you know, I was with Lady Alma. Ursula Rucker, who's on this record as well. James Poisner was playing piano on the tour. And, we were, all those Philadelphia cats, we were all friends. And we all hung out. And we all made interesting music. And that's how I started. I started touring with them. And because of Seasons Change and how people love that, they love that record. Jeff Wilkinson of Us Three gave me a call.
And he tracked you down.
Yes, apparently somebody had told him that I was unavailable.
Oh.
And I hadn't heard anything. So he said, well, we had thought to use you first, and then we were told that you weren't available. And so when we tried somebody else, and so it didn't work out, so we tried to call you again.
Oh, so, my gosh.
So I went over to London and, you know, again, young and stupid, not knowing anything. You know, Sony Music called me up and they said, oh, Allison, could you come in and just talk about this project? Okay. And so I walk in, Sony, and the woman is there, says, hello. Well, I'm Allison Crockett. Oh, Allison Crockett, hi, come on in. They're waiting for you. What? I don't know anything about anything.
That's wild.
And so, I mean, I go over to London and he gives me this record and this music, and he says, write over this. Okay, what do you want me to write about? And from that record, I learned how to write over anything because I had to write music of a specific nature. I had never had to do that before. I had to write music over top of a track that I didn't produce, which I hadn't really done a lot of. And I had to write about gun violence, or I had to write about another political idea because he wanted his record to be a political record. I only wrote love songs and were things that I thought that were just interesting. I really didn't think of myself as a writer. And my husband had told me, you know, I was writing material. He was like, Allison, you're a composer. I said, no, I'm not. I just write songs. I don't.
Allison.
And so, I mean, I went over there and I wrote material and I learned how to write without any instrumentation. So I didn't have a keyboard. I didn't have anything. And he said, well, this song is good, but you have to write it again. What do you mean I have to write it again? It's not, no, you have to write this part again. What? So I wrote one of the songs Enough 4 times. And it's like, oh, can you do this track? And I had to write it. I had no piano. I had nothing with me. I didn't have, you know, back then, you didn't have like a recorder or anything like that. So you just played the thing on a CD player and you just, you know, wrote it down on a piece of paper and then you came in and you wrote it. And so, I mean, it was a very unique experience and I learned how to do, I learned how to do a lot of things from that whole session. And I did a lot of my touring with us three and I really appreciate Jeff for giving me that opportunity. He gave me some of the first opportunities for me to tour Japan and to tour Europe. And I still have friends from that tour.
Oh, you're going to have more now. Jeff was like your brother over in the UK. Expanding your horizons. And proof is in the pudding because Get Out was one of the songs. That was back in, what, 94? And it was top 10 in Japan. And then another song was top 5. Shoo! You learned lessons well.
Well, it was great. I mean, Get Out was fun. I had a good time. That was my ode to Chaka Khan in a jazz style. Because I just wanted to, you know, I'm somewhat of a chameleon, and I didn't realize how much of a chameleon I was. On King Britt, that first record, When the Funk Hits the Fan, I did 4 tracks, and only on 2 did people actually know it was me. And the other 2, which were more R&B tracks, they didn't associate them with me. They thought they were other people because I was known as a jazz person for a while.
Mm.
And on Jeff's record with us three, they were like, oh, she sounds like Shirley Bassey. No, this sounds like Prince. No, this sounds like this. No, this sounds like this. And so that's kind of where I kind of got that. That's just who I am. And I was very blessed. We did a video with Get Out. We did a lot of wonderful things that I really enjoyed. We had a wonderful time.
That's so awesome. I just love the fact that when Jeff heard you on Seasons Change, he thought that he was tripping because he didn't know who he was hearing, but he was just so taken that he went to a lot of trouble to get you. You were it. He didn't even think about anybody else.
Well, I appreciate that. He's a sweet guy. And we had a lot of fun making that record. It was a very unique experience, I'll put it that way. It was very unique. And I've been very blessed. People have been very kind
in talking about how I sing and what I'm able to do musically, and I really appreciate all the kind words that people have said.
Well, you it's really wonderful that you are being so humble and you are appreciative, grateful for everything that has come your way. I know that you've been doing this for a while, but Allison, this CD is the culmination of a lot more than your talent, if that could possibly be. You have this voice, this critical voice that is needed. You are so, it's like what we have been discussing, a throwback to what people used to talk about but don't talk about now, and we need to. And then this contemporary voice that is saying what needs to get said in a whole new way. I don't get over the top. And I've been a little over the top with you just because, no, honestly, you had me on Becoming a Woman a few years ago, but now this is a whole different side of you. It's not that, you know, it's necessarily going to be a comfortable thing for me to play all the tracks on your CD on the show, but you need to be marketed multi-genre across the board, every single niche you can possibly find, because there's going to be something for somebody to play. One of your songs is going to touch somebody on some genre somewhere, and the ones that I can play, I cried three times listening to this doggone CD.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, honestly, reactions like that make it worthwhile for me to do this. The music industry is a tough industry right now.
Oh, shoot.
Not just, you know, it's not for just me, but for a lot of us. And we've gone through a lot of different shifts. And some of them are good, but a lot of them are tough. And, you know, our kids, the kids who are very small, who are living with this and just this whole new way of dealing with things, are going to have it a little easier, I think, because they'll be used to it. But, you know, I've never cursed on a record before. This has never been something that I did, but this would kind of make me do that.
Yeah, but you know, well, first of all, you needed to get out of the house. You needed to explore Allison Crockett instead of being mommy 24/7. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And that's part of the whole joyous freedom in listening to this. My gosh, it's people aren't necessarily used to and I've said this a few times, but I mean it so much in this regard, the breath of fresh air that you are on this particular precipice of August 2012.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it. I just wanted to make a record of music that I liked. And I like, you know, I like jazz. I'm a jazz artist as well. I love R&B. I love spank funk. I love beautiful pop songs. I love stuff. I mean, this is, you know, these are, I mean, I love Stevie Wonder. I love Donny Hathaway. I love, a Coltrane-esque kind of feeling with Human. I love, you know, I love Nancy Wilson, which is where I kind of got the arrangement from Old Country, you know.
Mm.
I love Dinah Washington. I love Nina Simone. I love all these kinds of different artists and genres, and I just like music. It's really fun,
and
I enjoy listening to it and participating in it.
And you love poetry, too, because you are a poet, and you didn't necessarily know that.
Wow, I'm glad that somebody thinks so, because I was like, shh, I don't love poetry. I don't. I like things that are said pretty plainly. And Ursula is one of my favorite poets, and I think that she's one of the few people that I can actually listen to and enjoy. So I was so pleased that she could be on my record.
Well, folks are just about to hear Come Back as a Flower.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. So they can make up their own mind whether you are or not. And before the end of the show, I definitely want to play your take on Nature Boy because I was tripping. I was tripping listening to that and thinking, oh, and that King Cole, man, he would be so digging this. Oh, man, it's been such a joy. I just think the world of you, as you can tell. And it's really cool that you carved out a moment in time to speak to us an hour. And I'd love to have you back to give us a little second chapter of what's going on.
I would love to come back. And those who want to hear what it is that I'm doing, they can go catch me on CD Baby. They can always come to Miss Diva Blue at blogspot.com to check out. Please come out and see. You can purchase the album on iTunes. I'm pretty easy to find.
That's awesome. And I'm going to give that particular site to folks again. And Diva Blue is the nickname that King Britt gave to Ellison back in the day, and it has stuck. It's such a cool little chunk of the pie of who Ellison Crockett is. It's msdivablue.blogspot.com, and I'll give that to you again before the end of the show because you want to hear what the world is. This is another gospel. So cool. So everything is cool at home, groovy, planning to tour, and everything is okay with that at home? Everybody's cool? What are you going to do?
Everybody's cool. We're working on plans of performing a little bit more. I'm potty training the little one. And
fabulous.
The big one is in camp. I mean, we're all getting along and doing what we need to do, and I'll be out and about in just a bit. Just give me a second.
Okay, cool. Well, then when I get those plans formulated, I'll share because there are several tracks that I intend to keep on playing from Mommy, What's a Depression, if that's okay with you.
I appreciate that. I'm more than okay with me.
Okay, that's awesome. Ellison Crockett, thank you so much. And you go back to doing what you need to do. Your life is really busy, and it's an exciting world because you're in it, baby.
Oh, thank you. And thank you, listeners. I really appreciate all the support that I get from people. It makes my
day.
That's
awesome. I know you do appreciate it. Good. Well, we'll have another chat or two, and we'll keep in touch via Facebook. I'll never not know what's going on with you.
Yay!
Have a wonderful afternoon into evening, Ellison.
Thank you so much. You too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yep. I knew it. I knew that we would be talking for a while, and it would just be nonstop. I could honestly do another hour, and I know that she doesn't have it, and that's okay. We have some music. Ellison Crockett from her Mommy, What's a Depression CD, and this is Come Back as a Flower on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
We incarnate, pollinate, regenerate, elevate and reach to meet the sun. Open up and welcome the rain. Perpetuate beauty, however brief. Perpetuate beauty. Embrace, embody the magic of growth. It is love. It is divine. It is love. It is.
As I awake to greet the coming dawn, the sun was hardly peeking through the garden. I felt that with everything I was one. But how I wish that I could come back as a flower, as a flower, as a flower. How I wished that I could come back as a flower, as a flower, to spread the sweetness of love, to spread the sweetness of love. Oh, 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 love. Do 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 finish making love to many. Do 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 finish making love to many. The rainbow smelling sweet was in the air. I inhaled the silence I saw growing. They were so unmoved by things outside of themselves. But how I wish that I could come back as a flower, as a flower, as a flower. Now I wish that I could come back as a flower, as a flower, to spread the sweetness of love. And how I wish that I could come back as a flower, as a flower, as a flower. And how I wish that I could come back as a flower, as a flower, to spread the sweet, sweet, sweetness of love. Sweet, 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 sweetness of love. And how I wish. That I could come back. Hush, 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 that I could come back. I wish that I could come back as a flower. I could come back as a flower. Come back. Oh, how I wish that I could come back as a flower. The strangest thing came to me on this morning.
Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
like a sister or brother, and taking care of me like my own mother. And like my family doctor, you sustain my health. Oh, and I don't need fortune or fame, 'cause you're my greatest wealth. And when I was falling down, you lifted me to higher ground. No one sweeter to be found. So baby, I can promise you, I can give.
The coffee pot perking in the background because Mama Bear needs to have a refreshing cup of coffee. Not that there's any shortage of energy. It's just that I'm just so doggone pumped. And Alan Tide Chestnut just gave me another reason to be pumped. Told you a few weeks ago we were going to showcase another side of the Chestnut Brothers, and that is it. Oh, Lord. If you want to get yourself in a Philly frame of mind, you go get yourself Retro Soul. And that particular track, We've Got Love, which is a love song and a half, because it's so much more than a love song. If you were reading between those lines, the song just kills me. Al Chestnut had been a guest on the show, I guess a couple of months ago now. Yeah. And I just loved him. Al and Ty lived in Philadelphia for quite a while, and they turned out some music that just reflected my hometown so much that I get a Jones to hear them, and hopefully you will too. ChestnutBrothers.com has more information. You will see what is happening on their page. This is quite exciting. Al talked about this a little bit last time he was here. They had a song out called Stop the Violence, which they feel very strongly about. They've been activists for a long time in the community. Well, this time around, there was a young lady who heard the song named Nisha Prendergast. She's the granddaughter of Bob Marley. And she loved the song, and she wanted to lay down her own vocal tracks on it. So you'll hear the song that's revamped with Nisha on it when you go to the chestnutbrothers.com, or just not the, but chestnutbrothers.com. Just great stuff. Whether they're in a love song frame of mind, or they want to give some sort of anthem to you that will be your anthem in the days to come, they wrote a beautiful song that was letting people know about Barack Obama in 2008. We had a little brainstorm back and forth with Al, and I think that he might be writing a new piece to that song, a continuation of it. So they are just wonderful sources of music for healing and inspiration. Can't say enough about the Chestnut Brothers, can you tell? Yeah. Pieces of a Dream. Oh, that was good to hear. Malibu Nights from Ahead to the Past. 1999 was the year. My gosh. So good to hear that with our own, now based in the region, Eddie Backus Jr. on saxophone. And as you know, Tracy Hamlin had been a guest on the show here, and she was with Pieces for a few years, so she's got her own great memories. Just in case you don't know, going back to Philly once again, Pieces of a Dream, and that's James Lloyd on keyboard and Curtis Harmon, the basic unit of Pieces, were in a house band on local TV in Philly called City Lights. And Grover Washington Jr. saw them, and he called them forth, as only kings can do, and said, you know what, I really like you guys. I want to work with you, and if you don't mind, I'd love you to open up my tour when I go cross country. And at the time, James Lloyd was a senior in high school. What a trip that must have been. So we know, of course, that Grover is no longer with us, but Pieces of a Dream marching on. I hear there are new plans afoot, and we'll keep you in contact with what those plans are. I'm not going to mention any names because one of my good friends is part and parcel of those plans. So I think that's really exciting, and we'll get to more about that as the days roll on, because I'll talk to that friend in the next 24 hours. Kenny Burrell, to be the second song in that set from 1978, It Could Happen to You, from Handcrafted. Just one of those delicious sidemen that was so much more than a sideman. People just loved to play with Kenny Burrell. He's 81 years old. I'm so tickled that he's still with us. Back when he was first starting out, Mom was on piano, played in gospel music in her Baptist church. Dad played the banjo and ukulele. So Kenny had all this mix happening in his household, and early on got to play with Dizzy Gillespie, then Oscar Peterson, Thad Jones, a whole bunch of different folks that really did like his style. Matter of fact, he was Duke Ellington's favorite guitarist. And now Kenny, and Gretchen Parlato could tell us more about this, Kenny had been the founder and director of jazz studies at UCLA and president emeritus of the Jazz Heritage Foundation. Kenny wanted to do something special for Duke Ellington and has taught classes on Ellingtonia, all about Duke Ellington. Just a cool guy, would love to spend time with us. You know, I really do focus on these legends, and it's just nice to get their perspective on what has been, what is now, and what they perceive will be. So that's another wonderful gentleman on my list, Kenny Burrell. Beautiful song, It Could Happen to You. And Alison Crockett, Come Back as a Flower, from her Mama, Mommy, What's a Depression CD. I'm going to try to play one more before the hour is over, because I just want you to get the full breadth of the effect of Alison Crockett and what she is able to do. But I promised folks, since he was on Cool Jazz Conversations last night and since he was in the chat room, I thought I would turn our attention to Phil Denny, because there was a song that Joy and I discussed last night. So far, it's my favorite song from the CD. I don't think I'm going to change my mind. When you see a title like this and you know already it's personal, the title of the song is When We Were Friends. Ooh, that could hurt. It goes deep. And he conveys with this saxophone something about that title. You'll see for yourself. Phil Denny with his brand new Crossover CD. That's the title of it. When We Were Friends on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes.
diamonds on the soles of his shoes. Diamonds on the soles of his shoes. Diamonds on the soles of his shoes. Diamonds on the soles of his shoes.
Got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Well, that's one way to lose these walking blues. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. She was physically forgotten, but then she slipped into my pocket with my car keys. She said, "You've taken me for granted because I please you. Wearing these diamonds." And I could say, ooh, as if everybody knows what I'm talking about. As if everybody here would know exactly what I was talking about. I'm talking about diamonds on the soles of the shoes. Thank you.
It's unbelievable to conceive that Paul Simon is going to be 71 this year, but that's what's going to happen in October. Woo! From his Watershed album. And I was thinking about this because I was thinking about Alison Krauckett. And Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes sure applies because of how I think of Alison. Just whatever she is touching these days, her words of wisdom, just I guess a domino effect of goodness and positivity, and at least thought-provoking, that we need to awaken. And what we were discussing before, nobody demonstrates the kind of bravery and stepping out of a comfort zone more than Paul Simon, because he defied a UN cultural boycott of apartheid back in 1986 when he fell in love with music from South Africa after he heard the Boyoyo Boys do Gumboots. He decided he was going to go because he wanted to foster goodwill. He wasn't going to wait. Nelson Mandela was still in jail. He wanted to get together with Joseph Shabalala and the Ladysmith Black Mambazo group over there and do some music that mattered. And now after all this time, here's Graceland, 25th anniversary remastered edition, one of the most awesome combinations of music that anybody ever put together, because it just embraced cultures, and my God, we are richer for it. So beautiful, so cool to play that song. After Corinthia Cromwell and the Evolution Band and Sam's Jam from Peace of Mind Outside the Lines, and Phil Denny from his crossover CD and When We Were Friends. One more from Alison Krauckett right here, Nature Boy, Her Way, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.